Chapter 3. Return to Chaemon. Upon the narrow plain by the great silver river of Anrok stood the bright Tor Gate, an ancient edifice open once more by Sigmar's decree. A camp had sprung up. The ruins about the gate were thick with artisans from the Eternal City, working under the watchful protection of the Lord Castellans and their warriors, whose keen eyes were ever searching for signs of attack. Everywhere were the signs of fresh works. Wizard rites levitated the tumbled blocks of broken fortifications to stand once more atop one another, their fellows mortaring them into place with molten stone jetting from lances that burned with a magical heat. New life returned to the bones of the dead town. The gate shone with pure energies of untainted magic. Chronosmiths worked their gentle but potent spells, walking solemnly around and around the gate's town, and their deep sonorous chants provided a calming counternote to the clamour of construction. Wherever their sandaled feet passed, the land seemed changed, cleansed. The realm was healing. Trumpets and war horns blared. An honour guard formed up along the wide highway leading out of the gate eastwards towards the shattered city. These men wore the turquoise armour of the Celestial Vindicators and had left their warrior chambers to hold the gate when the first attack on Elixir had been undertaken. They stood tall and proud, eager to welcome their brothers back. Black clouds raced overhead and lightning blazed. A vanguard of stormcasts from 5 storm hosts was deposited along the cliffs to the north and upon the road ahead of the gate. Liberators and Judicators took up defensive positions. Prosecutors leapt skywards, scanning the lands for enemies. All was expertly done, but done for the sake of procedure. The lands around the gate already belonged to the forces of Azir. Trumpets blew again. The bright Tor Gate throbbed and opened. The field of magic bowed, glowing brightly, swelling forward over the road. Shining motes detached themselves from this luminescence, dimmed and took on the shapes of marching men. Lord Thostos Bladestorm, as finder of the hammer, emerged first. A swaying forest of standards followed, the icons and banners of the Celestial Vindicators all together. Then the remainder of the storm hosts came out. Excepting a few brotherhoods assigned to guard the Silver Way and the Bright Tor Gate, the entire host emerged in a long column. Their fellows lining the way cheered and shouted, but their welcome stumbled and quietened when their greetings were not returned. The singing of the Celestial Vindicators, once renowned for its volume and fervour, had become restrained, though they marched with no less purpose. Thostos passed beyond the gate plaza, through a tumbled gateway that was already covered in scaffolding. Mortal craftsmen stepped back, first in respect, but then in fear. Thostos's armour sparked and fizzed with magic. His eyes glowed a dull blue, not bright enough to outshine daylight, but when he walked in shadow, one could see them glimmer coldly. Many of the warriors who walked behind him showed similar signs of change. There was a silence and a certain dreaminess in their bearing. As more and more of those who had fallen and been reforged marched forth, the shouts of their brothers lining the route died altogether. The grim rearguard of the Celestial Vindicators came out from the gate. A gap opened up, more trumpets sounded, and the gate's light swelled again, and the hammers of Sigmar came forth. The Hammer Hands were at the fore, Lord Celestant Vandus Hammerhand upon the Drakoth Kallanax leading them. Amid Vandus's own ranks were many who had fallen, and this was giving the Lord Celestant cause for concern. Vandus had summoned his Lord Relictor, Ionis Cryptborn, to march at his side. They spoke quietly. Overly cautious, perhaps, for the trudge of thousands of feet covered all but the loudest clarions and war songs.
"Thostos has changed," said Vandus to Ionis. "He speaks only a little, and what he says is distant. I feel that I must strive constantly for his attention. His eyes burn with blue fire, the air crackles around him, and all who approach him feel the heat of his rage. And he's not alone."
"Small wonder," replied Ionis, "for here in the Bright Tor Mountains, Thostos died, Under these same peaks he will be avenged.
I spoke with him on the way to the muster chamber. I asked him if he had been changed, if we were truly eternal, as Lord Sigmar promised.
And what did he reply?
He said yes, to which of the two questions I cannot fathom. Then he strode away from me. Kallanax rumbled. Vandas absently scratched at the celestial beast's neck.
I see,
said Ionis. Ionis, I call you to me for counsel. You wield the magics of the storm.
At my lord Sigmar's command.
You came from death, so they say.
I have two masters. You know that, friend of old.
Then please, as my friend and advisor, tell me what has occurred. We are promised eternity to bring war upon the minions of the Four, but I did not expect it to take this course. I see it in others, too, many of my own. Andricus and Laudus are reluctant to discuss it with me.
It is simple, Lord Celestant. Your warriors have died and returned. Their alteration is inevitable.
The Lord Relictor carried a heavy reliquary, the bones of a hero from the Age of Myth in an open casket upon a staff. The casket was surmounted by a starburst of gold, and many other fittings of metal besides. It was heavy, but Ionis carried it as if it were nothing, and easily kept pace with Kallanax's swaying stride. How is this inevitable?
Death is a constant. It wraps everything, binding all fate as tight as a funeral shroud. One day, all this will die. Sigmar will die. You and I will die. The Four will die. We are eternal, yes, but even eternity is not without end. When all else is dead, then death will be the last to die. Sigmar defies death with his magic, plucking us from the underworlds and reforging our mortal form. Death is jealous. When our warriors skirt the borders of that dark country, a part of them is stolen away.
None can defy Sigmar, said Vandas.
Death can, Vandas. Death only seeks to take its due. Sigmar is the thief in this affair, not death, said Ionis. And so death snatches at our spirits, and we return to this life a little diminished as we pass him by. The shortfall has to be made up somehow.
With what? Ionis shrugged.
Sigmar is the lord of the storm. I serve him, but I am of death's realm. You ask me of death, and a right to do so, for I guard the souls of our comrades. But to know the secrets of the storm, one must ask the Lord of Storms, and I do not think he will give up his knowledge.
Vandas blew out a breath.
There is something else on your mind, Hammerhand?
Yes, there is more. I've been troubled by sights of things to come. Visions. I'm unsure of them. Are they part of the God King's gift, or have I too been changed?
You have not died. You remain as you were.
Nevertheless, I was stolen from under Death's nose, and I was exposed to the fell energies of the Gate of Wrath. The unlight of chaos touched me, Ionis. Have I become impure?
Your visions are nothing to be afraid of. Or they might be. How will you know unless you act upon them? This is an age of wonder. Should your visions lead you falsely, pay them no heed and we shall discuss them further. We are fortunate in being able to suffer the worst lapses in judgment, yet live to learn from them.
Are you not afraid of what might happen to us when we die and return?
Death cannot change me, because I already belong to death. Why would death try to take what it already owns? And if I should fall and become as Thostos after my remaking, then what of it? It will be only for a while. Death is a transition. To change is not only the purview of chaos, but a necessary part of order also.
The road from the Bright Tor Gate turned towards the cliffs and began to climb. The gorge of the Silver River dropped away to their right. Behind them, the bizarre sight of the celestial worm Argentine heating the great crucible dominated the sky. Beyond the cliffs, the mountains stepped up, walling away the sky. At the brink, where the road crossed the clifftop and joined the main Anvroch highway, were two crumbling towers. Once a toll gate, perhaps. They were now piles of wind-blasted stone. Upon them snapped the banners of the storm hosts in Anvroch's hot wind. The angle of the road's ascent allowed Vanders to see far up and down the line. He caught sight of Phostos, a lonely figure at the front of a tongue of brilliant blue-green. There was a gap of 100 feet between Vanders's own position and the last of the celestial vindicators. Behind the hammers of Sigmar came the lions of Sigmar, and so on, a long stream of warriors that led back to the bright Tor gate. The road was a marvel of Duodin engineering, and although it had seen no maintenance for centuries, there were few holes in its well-paved surface. The buttresses holding back the cliffs had stood the test of time, and the roadway remained largely clear of debris. Vanders thought on what Ionis said for a time, as the wide highway mounted higher and the thin lands of the river's margin dropped away. "Do you think me a coward for asking on this, Ionis?" he asked. "I assure you I am not. I pledged myself to Sigmar, body and soul, and he has rewarded me well. I only wish to know the full price I am being asked to pl—" Vanders was interrupted by a whooping screech. He looked upwards towards the top of the cliff and saw tendrils of dark magic. A titanic rumbling growled across the vale of Anvroch, building to a deafening cacophony, and a long swathe of the cliff face peeled away and came down. Kallanax reared, backing into the Knights Vexilor, following Vanders and Ionis. Thostus's storm hosts ahead threw themselves into a desperate run as a mountain's worth of ore-rich boulders crashed down upon them. Many could not get clear in time and were swept away to their deaths or buried alive. Vanders's hammer hands surged behind him, desperate to get to their buried fellows and pushed by the weight of the column still marching up towards them. "Back! Back! Do not approach!" shouted Vanders. All heeded the wisdom of their lord and halted. From higher up the mountains, a second avalanche rushed from the high peaks, dislodged by the collapse of the cliff face, dumping thousands of tons of ice and snow atop the rocks. "Stop the march!" Vanders raised a hand, and a frantic series of trumpet calls rang back down the road. The column came to a stumbling halt. The noise stopped. Stray boulders bounced only yards from his position. Puffs of storm magic burst from the landslide, whisked upwards to join the distant thunderheads as trapped men succumbed to their wounds. Dust sifted through the air. By now it was late afternoon, and the sun coloured the metal-rich cloud a pale yellow. For a moment, shocked silence reigned, to be shattered by braying laughter drifting down from the mountains above.
"Beastmen!"
Lord Vanders shouted.
"At them!"
Kallanax roared, and his draconic voice carried far back down the road. A score of Lord Celestants broke from the leading three storm hosts, their Drakoths leaping to the mountainside. Vanders leaned forward as Kallanax bounded upwards, his sharp claws and momentum propelling him up the nearly sheer surface. They reached the top of the cliff where the main road ran. There, the bright Tor mountains intruded deep into the valley, and five peaks reared their snowy heads high above. The scaled beasts bounded onto the slopes beyond the main road. The beastmen, a strange copper-skinned breed, occupied a shallow ridge cutting out from the mountain. They were spread some distance along the road, but there was a thick knot of them on a canted ledge, grouped around one that Vanders assumed to be the leader. The beast chief, a shaman of some sort, was a heavily built mutant, his aura alive with dark power. Vanders headed right for him. To his left and right, beastmen broke and ran, their nimble goat's legs granting them unnatural agility on the steep mountainside. But the Drakoths were quicker, as sure-footed as mountain lions. Terrified bleating echoed through the peaks as the Drakoths ran down their prey and tore them apart. Vanders burst through the shaman's bodyguard. These were larger and better armoured than the feeble specimens the other Lord Celestans slew, but Kallanax ripped them to pieces with his heavy claws just the same. Crude weapons bounced from Kallanax's patrol, and those that hit his body were turned by his thick hide. The Drakov bit down hard on a creature and shook his jaws viciously, casting the broken body aside. Vandus was intent upon the leader. The shaman raised a staff of black oak that burned with unholy power, but Vandus smote the creature on the head, slaying it instantly. The ledge was cleared.
"Back! Back to the columns!"
shouted Vandus. He waved his hammer around as a signal, then slid from Kalanax's back, bent down to the corpse of the beast shaman, and took his prize. The Lord Celestans returned to the column. Vandus rode up to Ionis and cast the head of the beast lord to the ground.
"Swift vengeance," said Ionis.
"Aye," said Vandus. "Yet the damage to the celestial vindicators cannot be undone." He was concerned and a little afraid. Some of these men met their third deaths today. One wonders what they will become. Vandus called to his signalers and his knight's heralder. "We must hold the march. Get men to the top of the cliffs and send prosecutors to the mountaintops. And find me our scouts. I want to know how this ambush was missed." Vandus surveyed the fan of rubble burying the road. "Send back to the gate for workers and wizard rites. We can go no further before we have cleared the way." He looked back angrily down the stalled column. "This will cost us at least a day.